let's examine the response of our Christian community to the cultural turmoil regarding sexuality and children.
Licensed clinical psychologist Dr. Beverly Yonke talking about her presentation at the Fall 2018 Issues Etc. Making the Case Conference.
In 50 years, we've spiked to what is now a cultural crisis from what was a nearly non-existent issue. We can wring our hands, remain unacquainted with the facts, or simply remain silent and avoid the unpleasantries. Biblical sexuality and God's created order aren't polling well these days, while media talking heads gush about the joys and justice of violating natural law.
You can meet and hear Dr. Beverly Yonke making the case for a Christian response to the transgender child at Issues Etc.'s Making the Case Conference, November 9th and 10th in Dallas, Texas. Find out more and register at issuesetc.org. There is no doubt some amount of hysterics taking place. There were hearings over the course of several days last week, ending on Friday, for Brett Kavanaugh to take the vacated place on the U.S. Supreme Court. And some are hailing this as a great change on the court for the better, for a number of reasons, but primarily because perhaps we might see a court that is willing to at least hear the possibility of putting restrictions on Roe v. Wade. Others, well, that's where the hysterics come in. Others are saying that women are going to die. It's that simple. Brett Kavanaugh is confirmed women will begin dying because Roe v. Wade will be overturned. Maybe the truth is, well, somewhere in between. We're going to be talking to Carol Tobias, president of Natural Right to Life, and get her response to a Slate column titled "The Judicial Assault on Roe v. Wade Has Begun." Carol is a regular guest. She's president of Natural Right to Life, based in Washington, D.C. Carol, welcome back to Issues Etc.
Thank you. It's great to be back.
Here is the prediction found in the Slate column I mentioned just a moment ago. In one of the paragraphs, it reads, "So long as Justice Anthony Kennedy sat on the court, laws like Missouri's," and it's referring there to Missouri's attempts to restrict access to abortion or to beef up abortion providers' medical compliance, "laws like Missouri's were likely to get struck down at the Supreme Court, but as soon as Kennedy retired, Roe's demise was all but guaranteed. His probable successor, Brett Kavanaugh, has a strong anti-abortion record and emitted anti-choice dog whistles throughout his confirmation hearings. Once he joins the bench, the court will begin upholding anti-abortion laws, starting perhaps with Missouri's, by defining an overdue burden downward. And after it has eroded that standard to the point of meaninglessness, it will overturn Roe altogether." How do you respond to that?
Well, there is certainly a lot of hysteria going around. Certainly, I want Roe v. Wade to be overturned, and I don't know if we've got five judges now, hopefully, that will do that, but we don't know that. What we do know, and they're using a Missouri case here, as the starting point or the basis for this article, a judge on the Circuit Court of Appeals in Missouri, on the Eighth Circuit Court, interpreted a Supreme Court decision slightly differently than the abortion industry did. The Supreme Court had said that you cannot impose an undue burden on a woman seeking an abortion through, you know, some law that might be passed by a state legislature. This judge looked at the Supreme Court decision or ruling and said what they said is that you can look at the burdens, but you also need to look at the benefits of that law and balance them. So he, you know, told a federal district judge on a case that, you know, he was hearing on appeal that he needed to go back and look at the law and look at not only the burdens to the woman looking for the abortion, but also the benefits that the law might provide. And that is all he did, and the other side is just jumping up and down, screaming that he is daring, challenging them to take this to the Supreme Court because he knows that with Brett Kavanaugh there, he's going to be upheld. That's, you know, wonderful, but it's all conjecture.
So let's talk about the particulars of that Missouri law and how it was read differently, as you say, than the abortion industry would like us to read it. What would the Missouri law have done? And as to the benefits that ought to be considered, not only the burden, but also the benefits, what would those benefits be?
Well, the Supreme Court had ruled recently on a law from Texas that said you cannot require abortion facilities to meet the same standards as ambulatory surgical centers. So if you go someplace to get your gallbladder removed or your appendix removed or some what might be considered routine minor surgery, it's not necessarily going to be a hospital. It will be an ambulatory surgical center set up for dealing with the easier cases like that. Well, the state had said abortion facilities have to meet those same standards. And in addition, abortionists have to have admitting privileges at a hospital within 30 miles of where they are doing the abortions so that if there is a problem with the abortion, they can immediately get the woman into the hospital, you know, for ongoing care. The Supreme Court struck that down and said that you created an undue burden for the woman seeking an abortion. Missouri law, instead of 30 miles, said that it had to be within 15 miles of the abortion facility, that the abortionist had to be have access to a hospital emergency room. And they also said you have to meet the same standards as ambulatory surgical centers, but we will then put in a provision that you can seek a waiver, and then you can, you know, talk to the state and tell them why you want the waiver. And in this case, the state actually did provide a waiver for the, you know, for an abortion facility. So this went to the court, and everybody just assumed, because it was so similar to Texas, that the courts would strike it down. Well, the federal judge did, but the Eighth Circuit came back and said, no, wait a minute, the state has provided a waiver for the one facility so that they don't have to meet all the standards, so we can't say for sure that that's not an arbitrary law, so there's nothing wrong with, you know, let's just give it a little more time to see how that works. As to requiring the abortionist be, you know, within 15 miles of a hospital, there are probably some benefits to both of these rules. The woman is going to have quicker, faster access to a hospital emergency room if something goes wrong with that abortion. The ambulatory surgical centers have some very strict requirements on cleanliness and health standards. Well, maybe it's a benefit for women seeking abortion if the abortion facility has those same standards. So the circuit court just said, go back and look at it and balance the benefits to, you know, to the burdens. And that's what the other side is just, you know, they're saying that he's directly challenging the Supreme Court decision, and he's looking at, you know, the Supreme Court ruling and doing what he thinks is appropriate under their own decision.
Why wouldn't those in favor of abortion on demand want abortion providers, the clinics they run, the people who staff them, to be as qualified, as well certified, as easy access to other medical facilities in case they're needed, as medically safe as possible?
That is an excellent question, and we have not been able to get an answer from anyone in the abortion industry. What is wrong with the abortion facilities that they can't or don't want to meet the same standards as regular ambulatory surgical centers that are, you know, in their area? What is wrong with the abortionist that he can't get admitting privileges at a hospital? You know, are they hiding something? They don't want to be singled out for these laws. They say that you are, you know, singling out abortion facilities and abortionists. You're expecting us to do more than, you know, there are more laws for us than there are for any other procedure. But then at the same time, they turn around and say, you know, don't treat us any differently. You know, we're just a normal, you know, doctor and, you know, woman helping center. So they're kind of trying to have it both ways, but they don't want to meet the same standards, and I would like to know why not.
We're expecting our third grandchild, and my daughter is hoping, if all goes well, to be able to deliver the child at a birthing facility that is separate from the hospital but located on the same grounds. The midwives there all have admitting privileges to that hospital because things do go wrong, complications do arise. They can walk down the hall, get on an elevator, and be in the regular birthing center for the safety of the mother and the child there. And these people were just rated, I think, third in the country for the quality of their medical care that they provide their midwives and midwife nurses there. It seems to me that an abortion facility should want to be as safe as possible, as safe as a place where a baby goes to be born rather than one where they go to destroy the child.
Their top priority is money. This is a huge money-making industry, and they can get a lot of money from a woman for doing the abortion. You know, and what I don't generally want to focus on health and cleanliness standards because, quite frankly, Planned Parenthood is putting up beautiful, new, fancy clinics so that they can kill more babies. So they can meet the standards if they wanted to. They would have to put in some time and some effort. It might mean that they have to shut down other facilities. So, you know, we can go after them on those kinds of standards, but then they can just, you know, meet those standards and they continue to kill babies. So that's not necessarily the solution, but I think that does call into question why they put up such a fight that they don't want to meet those standards.
With only 30 seconds here, Carol, is it true that if Brett Kavanaugh is confirmed, Roe will be, in some sense, at some point, in jeopardy?
Well, it certainly looks that way. But again, nobody can know for sure. You know, we might think that Brett Kavanaugh is going to be fine, but we don't know that every other member of the hopeful, you know, four on the court, four others, would necessarily agree. It's going to depend on the decision, on the case that comes before them. That is certainly, you know, my hope. But until something like that actually happens, we may not, you know, really know.
Carol Tobias is president of National Right to Life based in Washington, D.C. You'll find a link to them under the Listen on Demand page at issuesetc.org. Carol, thank you so much for your time. Keep up the good work.
Thank you very much.
In hour two of Issues Etc., we're going to spend some time with you, our listeners, via your email and the Issues Etc. comment line. That email address, talkback@issuesetc.org, talkback@issuesetc.org. And the Issues Etc. listener comment line, 618-223-8382. After listener email and the comment line, Dr. Adam Francisco will join us to begin a series introducing the books in the Quran, beginning with Surah 9.
Listen weekday afternoons to Pastor Todd Wilkin and guests on Issues Etc. Issues Etc. is a listener-supported program. Your financial support is vital for the continuation and expansion of this worldwide outreach. Our mailing address, Issues Etc., P.O. Box 83, Collinsville, Illinois, 62234. Box 83, Collinsville, Illinois, 62234. You can also donate at our website, issuesetc.org. Issues Etc. is a production of LPR, Lutheran Public Radio.
Hi, this is Pastor Clayton from Zion Lutheran Church of Muscoota, Illinois, a proud supporter of Issues Etc. Zion is a congregation firmly grounded in God's grace given in the Word and Sacraments, where we treasure the timeless beauty of the liturgy. Zion is also a vibrant, young, family-friendly congregation where you would be warmly welcomed. Zion is located at 101 South Railway Street in Muscoota, Illinois, and we would love to share God's gifts of grace with you. For more information, please visit our website at zionmuscoota.com.
Hey, Todd, what have our listeners noticed first when visiting the LPR studios?
Definitely the small size and the dirt.
Well, not anymore, thanks to our friends at the Cleaning Authority. They've turned this man cave into a space that meets even our wives' approval.
Whether it's our office or your home, the Cleaning Authority is your cleaning service provider in the St. Louis area.
To schedule a free estimate or to find out more, visit thecleaningauthority.com. thecleaningauthority.com.